Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned in to Paranormal Horizons, only on 106.5 KITC FM and Blog Talk Radio. Join your hosts, Jason Ophir and Pat Rice, as we delve into the world of the paranormal, the world of ghosts, UFOs, demons, and even Bigfoot.
Listeners, welcome to Paranormal Horizons. I'm Pat Rice.
And I'm Jason Ophir.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm cooking right now. I feel like I'm in the inside of an oven. It's so hot. You know, where it's so bad that I have a fan, and hopefully the audio can't pick this up, but I have this little desk fan, and it's blowing hot air on me. That's how bad it is right now.
But the hot air feels cooler than the hot air you're sitting in somehow.
Yes, but not by much. It's
okay,
like sitting in front of a heater.
I understand. And yes, hey, welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons on fire. I'm just going to say that because I think it's hot everywhere in the world. And we've got a great guest tonight, Jason, Paul Coffey.
Yes.
And, you know, Paul Coffey is a friend of Paranormal Horizons. He's been on our show before. He's with Central Texas Paranormal, and we're going to get him on the line here in a few minutes and just kind of check in with him about what's been going on in Texas and the paranormal world, and he's going to get us up to date. So I'm looking forward to chatting with him again here on Blog Talk Radio and KITCFM 106.5, KITCFM.com on the internet. All right, Jason. Well, as usual, I have not kept up with anything interesting going on in the world other than it's hot. Anything you've picked up on in the paranormal or interesting stories?
Well, there's always interesting stuff going on in the paranormal, but the subject I chose to briefly discuss this evening has absolutely nothing to do with the paranormal. I thought it would be good to take a little break from talking about UFOs and ghosts. And that story is a story that I did cover a while ago on the show. That is, and tell me if you remember when I talked about Yellowstone Park and the supervolcano.
Of course I remember.
Yes. Well, to remind the listeners, I'll kind of fill in the listeners as to what the original story or the history behind Yellowstone is. Basically, Yellowstone National Park sits on what they call the caldera. It's a giant volcano that's many, many miles across, and it typically erupts every 640,000 years, give or take. I mean, you could probably give or take hundreds of thousands of years or whatever, tens of thousands of years.
Wow.
Well, anyways, yeah, it's been 640,000 years since it last erupted. So we're getting into that sort of time where it wouldn't be unusual for the supervolcano to erupt. And what does that mean? Well, it isn't a Mount St. Helens. Basically, they're talking about an eruption probably somewhere in the magnitude of 1,000 times more powerful than Mount St. Helens. Anybody within a 200-mile radius of the supervolcano will be killed pretty close to instantly.
Uh-oh.
Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is it's pretty common knowledge that it's a large supervolcano, but there have been a lot of stories circulating the last year or two about some changes happening there. Now, the park is saying everything's normal, but I've noticed some stories where there have been a lot of fairly decent-sized earthquakes. There has been ground deformation that is a little bit outside of the norm, what you would normally expect. I think it was measured at one place in the park having raised 10 feet. And a lot of
That's
other crazy
a lot.
Stories. Yeah, it's a lot. So people are out there wondering whether or not the supervolcano is going to erupt anytime soon. So that brings me to the current story. The reason I'm talking about this evening is there is a recent story out, and it was covered by all the major news outlets, and that is there are some roads in Yellowstone that are melting.
Oh, my.
The asphalt is melting. So that is a combination of all of this thermal heat coming up through the ground, and, you know, also we're having hot weather as well. So what that means, I don't know. Does that mean there's a chance for an imminent eruption? Who knows? But a scientist in the field said it best. I was watching a documentary, and when he was asked whether or not he thought it was going to erupt anytime soon, his response, I thought, was perfect. He said, "I wouldn't be surprised if it did, and I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't." So there you go, people.
Well, maybe it's going to be the end of the world, Jason. I don't know. But, you know, you mentioned this would be a bigger eruption than Mount St. Helens. And Mount St. Helens, for those of you listening, I'm sure you know, is here on the West Coast. And I can't remember what year that erupted, Jason. Wasn't it in the 80s, early 80s?
I think it was 81.
And everybody kind of got caught by surprise. Remember that?
Yeah, so there were people that died because of it.
Exactly. And even though, you know, they started to know, okay, there's, you know, the earthquake activity and this mountain or this volcano is going to erupt, and they tried to warn people, but it was very sudden, really. And who knows, maybe what you're describing there in Yellowstone could happen. Could or couldn't, just like the scientists said.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Mount St. Helens, because they knew something was going on there. They, you know, they had the cameras focused on the mountain, but that was a very obvious example of ground deformation. The side of the mountain was bulging out. Now, is that what's happening? It's probably the same kind of mechanics behind what's happening in the caldera, Yellowstone caldera, not to that extreme. But, you know, if it were to erupt, what would that mean for the United States and the world? Well, obviously, like I mentioned, everybody within a couple hundred miles would pretty much be toast. But the main damage from an eruption from a supervolcano is going to consist of a vast amount of ash is going to go into the atmosphere. It's going to block the sun. It's going to cool the planet. All that ash has to go somewhere. So you're looking at all the center of the United States covered in ash, and we're going to run out of food because you won't be able to grow, and then there's health implications of breathing it, and animals are going to die. I mean, it's going to be a total nightmare situation.
Yeah.
So let's hope it doesn't happen anytime soon.
Yeah, it could cause definitely so many issues. You know, planes couldn't fly, so forth, things like that. So, well, thanks for bringing that forward, Jason. And I did want to go ahead and get Paul on the line. And I just wanted to mention again, Paul Coffey, Central Texas Paranormal. And Paul is a spirit intuitive. He also does paranormal investigations. He's even been on The Dead Files, which is a TV show, a couple of episodes on that of that show. And he just has a lot of interesting stuff going on. His background of how he learned about his ability, I'll wait for him to get on the line to share that, because it's a really interesting story that he has. So also, just so everyone knows, we will broadcast until 8 o'clock, top of the hour, wherever you are. And about halfway through the show, we'll probably take a commercial break because we like to offer commercials for Friends of Paranormal Horizons, and Jason has taken the time to set up a few commercials for some of the other, you know, paranormal folks. If you have a book or just anything, you know, we will create a free commercial for you. So look forward to that about halfway through the hour.
And we have a new one.
Yes, and are we going to hear that tonight?
Yep, we're going to hear the new one tonight.
All right. Well, without further ado, Paul Coffey, how are you this evening?
Oh, Pat, do you hear me? Hello?
Yep,
good.
I'm good. Hey, Paul.
Hi, how are you? Well, first off, I'd like to thank you once again for having me on the show. And I guess tonight we finally made it after
yes.
The problem. Yeah. So, ultimately, so we're talking about the paranormal, one of my favorite subjects, being I am a spirit intuitive or spirit sensitive, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, with all the investigations I've done, and as you mentioned the Dead Files, but in actuality, the TV show I was on was My Ghost Story Caught on Camera. And I was on that a couple times.
Oh, okay. So it's actually called My Ghost Story Caught on Camera.
Right. So,
gotcha. Okay.
However, have done some investigating, not for the Dead Files, but as a follow-up to one of the Dead File shows that was filmed here in Texas. The episode is called Surrounded. It was filmed, I think, back in 2011 or maybe 2012, but on a piece of property here, and they, you know, what they said on TV, actually, you know, what Amy Allen said was there. I was invited to go to this piece of property that had a double wide trailer where this woman lived, and I actually did in fact prove that what they were stating on TV was in fact there. So, and I have pictures of it. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. And, but at any rate, I just wanted to mention that. And, I don't know where you'd want me to start, you know,
well,
in talking.
Well, Paul, I want to start with, even though Jason and I know your background, for the listeners that that are just getting to know you, would you mind sharing your story again of, you know, back when you were in the Army?
Okay. Right.
Because I think that that's important.
Right. Well, you know, I always knew as a child that I had something special about me. And I didn't know exactly what it was, but I knew a little bit more about the spirit world than I believe other people would let on, you know. And whenever I'd ask people about it, they would just say, oh, it's all, you know, folklore, or, you know, we don't believe in ghosts. And so I never took it to heart, you know, the Catholic as well. But when I went into the military, everything changed. That was a game changer because my duty station was in Germany, and I was stationed on an original World War II Nazi air base. And, you know, from the moment I stepped on that base, and I was stationed there for 2.5 years, the first thing that happened was the military police picked me up at the train station and in a Jeep and, you know, drove me a couple miles to the base. And then as we're going through the front gate of the base, there was a building right ahead of us. It was the military police building, which back in the day was a Nazi Gestapo headquarters building, whatever, for the base. And there was a German carpenter on a ladder on the left side of the building sign, which was about 7 feet wide, about 2.5 feet tall. And there was another carpenter on a ladder on the right side of that sign, And as we pulled in the gate, they dropped the sign, which had stated on it, U.S. Army, you know, Dolan Barracks, Schwäbisch Hall, Germany. And they dropped the sign, and behind the sign was an original World War II eagle with the SS and ball claws, you know, typical artifact from World War II, which this was back
wow.
in 19... Yeah. So
did you get a
moment,
weird feeling?
Yeah, I'm like, where's my camera? You know, I'm like, I wish I had my camera in my hands. But, you know, as we pulled through and we drove up the road, I'm like, that has a special meaning to me. That has something, I have to think about this. There's something more to this than just seeing that. This is incredible in 1980 to be seeing this artifact just now being chipped out of the building. Just it meant something to me, but I didn't realize that it was in fact going to be a sign. And the thing about this police station was that to the right was the car path where you would just pull and drive up the road, and then to the left was a walking path, and that was it. That this building was, you know, put there perfectly so that, you know, if any the wrong person got in there, they could grab you. So. But what I didn't realize was that in the back of the building there was a courtyard that was all enclosed. It was 8-foot walls, had no roof, but it extended out from the building about 15, 20 feet. And every time I walked by that location, I would feel the temperature drop 10 degrees. I felt an immense amount of dread in my stomach, and I felt the hairs of my body stand up, and I also felt that there were hundreds of somebody watching me as I approached that area. And it would happen every time that I took this path, which was quite frequently because it was the way to get off base. And so one day I, you know, many times of this happening, I didn't realize, you know, I said, you know, this is spooky. It really is. I don't have an answer to this right now, and maybe someday I'll find out. So, like, one day, there was a best sergeant that worked in the police station, and we'd always see this guy walking around base with black clothes on, and he had an ambulance around his neck, and he had a book in his hand. And he would be by himself, and we're like, what's up with this guy? And, you know, people would say, well, you know what, if I were you, I would just stay away from him because he's on another frequency. And,
really?
You know, yeah, so, you know, and back then I wasn't really metaphysical or anything like that. But eventually one day I had duty down by the gate, and I had to use the men's room, and I walked into the police station, and he was behind the desk. And I said, you know something, if anybody knows what the heck's going on, he may know, you know. And sure enough, I said, hey, yeah, Sarge, I got a crazy question to ask you. He says, well, go ahead. No questions, really crazy. And so he sounded like a regular guy, so I opened up and I said, well, every time I walk by the building here, this, that, and this happens to me. And he said, well, it should. And I'm like, say what? And
yeah,
he said,
why?
Yeah, it should. Yeah, you know, like, really, what? You know, and he said, yeah. And would you like me to show you why? And I'm like, well, yeah, could you, you know? And, you know, so he said, follow me, and he walked out from behind the desk, and we walked by the jail cells and then out the side door into this courtyard, and he stood out in the middle of it, and he said, come on, step on out here and take a look. And so I did, and as soon as I did, he said, see the walls? Bullet holes all the way around the inside. And so during World War II, this is where they just took the prisoners and killed them, executed them right then and there. And,
ugh, that's horrible.
Yeah, so that happened, and the spirits were still lingering there, and they were lingering in the very same state that they died, because the immense amount of dread I felt was them standing up against the wall, ready to be shot. And so that was an amazing awakening for me. I then knew that I had the ability to sense spirit energy, and that would be just the beginning of my stay there on this base, where we had a helicopter crash of a CH-47 Chinook. It's one of the big ones with the twin rotors. And it went through maintenance, this helicopter. They changed all the engines and blades and all that. And then you have to recalibrate the instruments and, you know, they take it up for a test flight before they release it into the lineup again. And one of the people was an engine guy who has to check for, like, engine vibration. And so he rides in the helicopter during the test flight. And the co-pilot was my officer in charge. The engine man stood next to me in formation. So these people were pretty close to me, and they took off in this helicopter. I saw it take off. And it was close to 4:30 at night. You know, we get done at work at 5 o'clock on the base. So I went over to my barracks to get a pack of cigarettes and kill some time and then go back to the office and punch out, you know. And so I went up to my room, killed some time, had a cigarette, whatever, and then headed back down the stairs about 10 or 15 minutes later. And I noticed that the co-pilot's wife was in the officer's office, commander's office down on the first floor. And all of a sudden, she walked out with her two children, and she was bawling her eyes out. And I put one and one together, and I knew that something was bad going on. And I walked right out the door, right up to the hangar, went up to my office, my NCO, and said, "Hey, I think something bad's coming down, so get ready." And they asked what was going on. I told them, and then 5 o'clock came and got released, and we went back to our rooms. And within about 15 minutes, they called an alert, and they loaded my whole unit in trucks and carted them out to where this helicopter crashed. And all 250 troops, we were brought into a field, an open field, but like a plowed field. And there was a clump of woods, a good section of woods alongside of it that was untouched, and hardwoods, very tall trees. And the helicopter crashed into them woods because they felt that it would take the fall of the helicopter. But it did, but the helicopter still managed to drop 100 feet from the top of the trees, and it crashed and killed everybody aboard. All five, the crew members, pilot and co-pilot.
That's sad.
Yeah, it was very sad, very sad. And, they put my unit in formation in the field and at attention. And we're standing there with gear, guns, and everything. And the first sergeant comes out of the woods, and he points at the whole unit, and he calls my name. And I run down to him, and he took me by the arm and brought me into the woods, and he appointed me as the guard for this helicopter through the night, with a loaded gun, with orders to shoot to kill anybody that stepped within the perimeter. Because back then, there were spies that would, rummage through the equipment and pull out the secret radio gear, whatever they had in it, so...
Back in the 80s, that's like Cold War, isn't it?
Part of the Cold War. And, in fact, off in the distance, you could see there was a chain-link fence on the end of this field, which was also the highway. And they were doing high-speed Autobahn. You know, they travel pretty fast. So they put up a lot of fences. But there was a guy with a camera, and the lens was like 3 foot long. You could see this lens. My first sergeant said, "You see that guy there, way up in the distance? You see that camera? He's trying to get a picture of this." So, there may be somebody here visiting. You have orders to shoot, kill, and hurt the harm in any way so that nobody gets to this, helicopter. So, and the issue was that cockpit could not be disturbed, and the co-pilot and pilot were going to be laying dead at my feet through the night. So that was the other issue. However, of course, that was my officer in charge on the ground there dead, and there was no way that they'd have to go through my dead body in order to get to this helicopter, you know. So
I took that post. What an experience.
An amazing but tragic story.
Amazing but
tragic.
And, you know, but this is my story, and I can tell you, you know, just as it happened. And, you know, through the night, you know, well, the German fire department stayed off to the side, you know, at the ready, and they were drinking Jägermeister all night, having a good time, while I had...
Oh, yeah, I hate that stuff.
You know.
Yeah, it's gross.
You know, I would have liked to have joined them for some, but, of course, I couldn't leave the perimeter. I had orders. So, at any rate, midway through the night, the moonlight got high. The moon got high over me, and the rip in the trees made it so that the moonlight could come down. And it was that bluish-gray moonlight, and it just lit up the whole area. And I'm like, oh, wow, I can live with this. You know, this was great. You know, I could see everything. And all of a sudden, I guess that was true, because I started to see all five of these soldiers in front of me, and they were also like a bluish-gray light. And I could not see their legs, and I did, however, see their faces, and none of them had smiles on their faces. They were like, what the hell, you know, what the hell, you know? So at that time, I had to decide to have a cigarette. And so I had to step out of the perimeter, but I only did so because it was jet fuel everywhere. If I dropped an ash, I would have been toast as well and burned up the whole place. So I stepped out and quickly had a cigarette, and then I said, okay, that's it, back in. And I get back, and they were gone. So I was, like, you know, pretty relaxed after that, and I went the whole night without any further issues. But then about, you know, once we cleared this of the field and brought it back to the base, about a month and a half later, in my barracks room, which was also original World War II barracks, which the Nazi soldiers used to live in it, that worked on the airfield.
Creepy.
And, and I had my own room, and by myself, but there were two bunks in the room, one on top of the other, and you have more space if you stack them on top of one another, and so I had it that way. And so one night, about a month and a half after the incident, I normally would sleep through the night, no problem. You know, you have a heavy day of physical labor and exercises, but I had no problem sleeping through the night. But one night, I woke up about an hour and a half, and I looked into my room, and the drapes were pulled, and, you know, because there were, like, street lights out in front of the barracks. And so the lights would still come through the cracks on the end of the drapes, just bringing in a little, you know, light to the room. But,
sure.
As I said, I opened my eyes, and I looked into my room, and I saw what seemed to be the legs of a man. And they were black.
Yeah, that sounds frightening.
Yeah, and it was in the corner of my room, but it absolutely was a set of legs of a man. And I had to look down because I had a bunk on top of me, and I'm like pretty tall, 6'2" or whatever. I had to bend down, and as I did, I saw its midsection, and then I bent down a little further, and I saw its head, and I saw its two eyes, and they were looking at me. And I'm like, uh-oh, now what? I have a ghost in my room. And it was 3D. You could make out it was in a uniform. I couldn't tell if it was a flight suit or not. That's what they wore in the helicopters. but it did have a uniform on, and I knew it was a soldier. And I told it, it dawned on me that if I went down to the CO, the commanding officer's office, and reported this, they would have told me, "Well, Coffee, the bus to the hospital leaves in 10 minutes.
Or have another drink."
and your butt is on that bus. No, I think they would have sent me to the hospital for sure. And so, so I said to myself, I'm not going to tell anybody about this.
Yeah.
But I told the ghost, I said, if you cause me one problem, I will deal with you, you know. And I will have to do something about it. And, I mean, I didn't know what I would do.
So you took charge right away.
Right.
I don't know. I think I'd run out of the room. But, hey, Pat, I see that we're hitting the halfway point.
Yes.
Are you ready to play a little commercial? And then when we come back, I definitely want to talk to Paul about some of his new investigations.
Absolutely.
And one thing in particular I'm interested in learning about is what you're doing with the Sacred Order of Exorcists.
Yes.
Okay.
Paul, we're going to get to that right after commercial. And Paul, first of all, on behalf of myself and Jason and Paranormal Horizons, thank you for your service, number one, to this country, for your time in the service. Thank you. And we're going to be right back with Paul Coffey, Central Texas Paranormal, here on Paranormal Horizons, Blog Talk Radio and KITCFM.com. Stay tuned.
Ghosts of San Francisco.
Are you into international intrigue? Secret societies, ghosts, and nonstop violence? Then you're going to want to check out Mord McGee's novel, Ghosts of San Francisco. Ghosts are real. It's a scientific reality. These aren't your clanking chains, sheet-over-the-head ghosts that your grandmother warned you about. These are the future, when something moves in the corner of your eye and is gone when you turn to look. When you feel like you're being followed. When the knife is in a different place on the kitchen counter than where you just set it. You're not imagining things. Ghosts are real. Add that to international intrigue, secret societies, and super powerful world corporations, and you have Ghosts of San Francisco, the explosive debut novel by Mord McGee, Volume 1 of Tales of the Eclipse.
Well, how's that for getting some really hardcore music in there, Pat?
You know, I like that hard rock music. You know me, I'm a rock and roller, but gosh, you're kind of freaking me out. Ghosts of San Francisco, that's where I'm from.
I think there's a lot of ghosts in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, there are. I probably have a couple stories. But, yeah, so, and I understand also, Jason, I think we're getting some of those books that we're going to be giving as giveaways.
Yes,
here on Paranormal Horizons.
I was told we are being sent a 6-pack of that novel to give away to our guests, and we should be getting those shortly. It's going to be exciting to give something away.
And then hopefully he'll be a guest on the show soon.
Sure, yeah.
We haven't talked about it, we got to get him scheduled.
We should, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Paul Coffey, Central Texas Paranormal, spiritive, intuitive, thank you for sharing your story of how you kind of got into this whole kind of ghost hunting, if you will, or just, you know, being able to see the spirits, talk to them, and acknowledge them. Thank you for telling us your story. And what's going on right now? Now, Jason, you mentioned Paul's involved with the Archbishop file.
Am I correct in that, Paul?
Yes. Well, put it this way, I was involved with him. I'm no longer involved in that, in the Sacred Order of St. Michael. I had to. I have a lot going on for myself. And, you know, as a spirit sensitive, you know, it's a longer story for maybe another show, but
okay.
I do a lot. I do a lot for spirits in the sense that I'm able to cross them over. And
yes.
So with that, by me doing that, spirits come to me all day long for me to cross them over. And
so you're kind of bombarded.
I am bombarded at times. I am my only person here in my house that does it.
So, Paul, wait a minute. What do you do with that? How do you handle that? How do you handle, you know, getting these messages and things like that? I mean, is that exhausting? Tell us about that.
That would drive me crazy.
Yeah, for some people it would, but I'm used to it. You know, I've had my path into the paranormal that I've had my successes with. It is a story in itself, how it came about. Back in maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I wanted to go into the paranormal again to see if I could replicate what I saw in the military. I had retired. Retired early, actually, and basically it was partly due to the incident back in Germany, and I have a VA disability, so, they told me, that they didn't want me to work anymore, so I stopped, that and went on a disability, so because of what took place years ago and PTSD and all that kind of thing, but I decided to go into ghost hunting just to see if I could replicate everything again. And lo and behold, I started having success right off the bat. And my first investigation was on the USS Lexington that the Kling brothers were putting on here in Corpus Christi, Texas. And that particular day back in 2011, actually, we took a walk through the aircraft carrier, and my video camera captured a sailor in uniform walking into a wall.
Really?
When it saw us coming through the bulkhead, it just walked into the wall. And so you could see it in the hatchway on the opposite side, and then all of a sudden it disappears within 1 second.
Did anybody else see it, or was it just you because of your connection?
I was the only one that saw it because I was stepping through a hatchway, and it's on video, so I have it. It's something
I'd like to capture it
on video.
Is
so,
that on YouTube, Paul?
Yes, it is, and I can maybe send a link to Jason and.
If you would, we'd like to share that on our Facebook page.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
I got a bunch of stuff, I got some of the best ghost shots I've ever seen. Not that they're mine; it's just that I actually have captured ghosts that were like 4 feet away from me, and almost like a portrait shot, of a ghost's face. That you can actually make out all the details of the face, the eyes, the nose, the hair,
oh, that's
and
amazing.
The mouth, mustaches. Yeah. So
Paul, let me ask you a question about that, because I don't have that gift that you do. But so, like, if you're just going somewhere in your normal life, running an errand, maybe you go into a store and you're shopping, do you see things? I mean, are you seeing ghosts and getting messages?
Is it like Whoopi Goldberg in the movie Ghost, where like all these ghosts are following you around? Is it that obvious or no?
I'm going to tell you this. This is what happens with me. Let's say if I go into a post office, my local post office, I get bombarded.
Okay, good example. Yeah.
I get bombarded by spirits, and some of them will jump right into me and attach. And,
gosh, I would be a mess.
Do you mean they try and like possess you, like take you over, your body over?
Yeah, they jump into you and they take the ride home. So I don't deal with them. I don't deal with them right off the bat. I go home and then I run a an audio clip that brings down the archangels and they remove the entities from me. You know, spirit attachments. Other entities are harder to remove. That has to be done in another fashion. But
now, Paul, sorry to interrupt, but are they when this happens? Is it generally like negativity, like negative spirits, or is it a combination?
How do you know if you have an attachment? Like Pat's saying, I mean, do you just feel the negativity, or are there like symptoms that you would feel?
Well, there's different ways. For me, I'm a sensitive, and you know, they know what I do. They know that I send them to the light. They want to go. They come to me. It is fantastic, but so you can say. For me, I have to deal with them. And,
right. It's like a full-time job.
They jump into my body, and let's say overnight, like right after the full moon over the weekend, this past weekend, you know, like Sunday night, I woke up Monday morning, and I kind of had a headache, and I kind of felt drained, and I went and checked myself, and I had over 10 spirit attachments in my body. And I immediately had to go into cleansing myself. And
how do you do that?
I have an audio clip that I had stated that actually brings down the archangels, and they actually remove these spirits two and three times at a crack. I sometimes have to play the audio clip three or four times to get them all. But by the time I'm done and they got them all out of me, I feel normal. And then I go about my day. So
Paul, do crystals help?
Do crystals help?
Crystals help, like, ward off or cleanse?
You know, I have no answer for that. I really need to find somebody that truly knows about crystals and spirits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people can, you know, have crystals. Oh, I love these crystals. This crystal does this. You know, use some black tourmaline, put it around your house. I got Apache tears and black tourmaline and blue crystals and all kinds of stuff here. It's right next to my bed. And, you know, and pink crystals and, you know, all of that.
Uh-huh.
But for me, I don't believe it does work. And
so it doesn't, that's fair.
There's pros and cons about it. I heard, you know, use them, put them around your house, they'll ward them off. But then I heard if you have them around your house, that it'll only keep them in.
Could be an attraction.
That's not good.
So now, Jason, did you have another? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paul.
You know, there's sort of a flip side to the coin. So, myself, you know, I stick with what I know works, and I have to use what works because of, you know, what I do. So, the other thing that works when I have spirits on me is that I bring down God's light. Okay, that's how I cross spirits, though. I bring down God's light, and the spirits are pulled into the light. And there could be hundreds, or there can be thousands of these spirits with me at the time, believe it or not. And it might take me like 5 minutes or four minutes to get all of
amazing.
So
I had no idea. Yeah, go ahead, Jason. You have a question for Paul.
Yeah, I just was curious if Paul believed in demons, and then what's stopping, you know, a demonic entity from completely taking you over? Is there a difference between just a spirit and a demon? Are demons more powerful to where they can actually succeed in taking you over and being possessed?
Well, I'm going to tell you this, that earthbound spirits do exist. There is no doubt about that, okay? A lot of people can, you know, say yes or no, you know, have their whatever they believe in, but I'm going to tell you right now that they do exist, and there's hundreds and thousands of them in this world. And there are more of them around than people actually realize and are willing to admit. A lot of houses and tenements are haunted. You know, a lot of your apartment buildings are haunted. That's a true
Jason
statement.
We've talked to a lot of people, Paul, about that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We've talked to others about the demons, and I appreciate what you're saying about there's probably much more demonic and evil in the world than we really understand. Or maybe maybe some do. I don't know.
Well, honestly speaking, the demonic does exist. It has existed for all of mankind, as long as mankind has been on Earth, and, you know, according to the Bible, you know, it's a known fact. And
I believe
in fact,
that.
Yes, and you should, because
I'm a skeptic. But
I wouldn't be, Jason, because I've had one. And so I learned firsthand. And I had to have a deliverance done on me. And
by deliverance,
well,
do you mean exorcism?
Concerned with people.
Pardon me?
I said I'm more concerned, worried about people than I am demons. But I have not had that experience, and that's key to my opinion. Had I had that experience, obviously I would, you know, think a little bit differently about it.
Well, Paul, what happened to you when you had a deliverance? Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, what happened was I went on a demonic investigation where somebody was they thought there was a possession going on, and so we went and did an investigation, filmed it all and everything, you know, I started doing, you know, I noticed, I can tell if the person has spirit attachments, and, you know, I found out that it did, and so I went ahead and removed it, and by doing what I do, I bring down, like I say, the archangels to do that, and they came down, and the demon, which none of the family had seen, all of a sudden started pushing the son around, and you know, ultimately, and then we knew we had something there that was didn't like what we were doing, and I didn't realize that it was going on the way out. It was going to attach to me, but yet to see the client in the state that the person was. They, for 3 years, have lost 3 years of their lives because they didn't want to leave the house. They were a burden on the rest of the family because they had to, you know, keep an eye on her, feed her, clothe her, bathe her, you know, the whole thing. And she would not do anything, other than that. So, you know, it's just a sad thing when you see it.
How would somebody know if they have a demonic attachment? Are there particular indicators that that's taking place versus just a regular earthbound spirit following you around?
Well, first you'd probably hear something like that going on. But, you know, you would see a downward spiral, and it's perplexing. You know, it could be anything from a person being physically ill, and, you know, they have different effects on people, or it could be a psychological effect, you know, and or, you know, so they control them psychologically so that they do as the demon says. And it can have all those different effects. And, you know, it's just a matter of what's going on when you investigate and try to figure it out.
Amazing.
But, yeah. So, you know, I have a friend of mine that's a demonologist. He just got his degree and became a demonologist. However, he's been fighting demons and been involved in it since 2002. And I just spoke with him today. And, you know, but at any rate, you know, we try to help each other. I give him things. He helps me out. And it's always good to have a demonologist at your ready, you know.
Well, you know, I think so, Paul, because we're hearing it from you. Archbishop File, we've had on the show a couple of times, and I know that you know him too, and it sounds like you're so busy and, you know, kind of like you can't necessarily be part of that team. But Archbishop File, who's a Catholic archbishop, and he says it just black and white. He says, Pat Rice and Jason, there's good and there's evil in the world. And, you know, we talk to folks like you that have really, you experience it. You know, some people, I think, in our normal everyday life, they are maybe possessed and or have the energy around them, and it affects them in their life. I'm not going to use any specific examples, but I'm a big believer in that, Paul. So thank you for sharing that story. Now, Paul, another thing that I wanted to ask you about, and because I saw this on your Facebook. Now, you're also involved as a reverend yourself in a metaphysical church? Is that
yes.
correct? Now,
yes,
what is a metaphysical church, first of all?
Well, a spiritual church, you know, just meaning that we believe in God and we have our own, you know, we conduct our own what we believe and, you know, freedom of religion, more or less. We don't have any fixed religious-based doctrine
okay.
that we go by.
I understand.
So,
kind of like a unity-type church?
Exactly. It's
okay.
an open session of religion, and we don't care what denomination. You know, you can be of any denomination and come to this, and it's just an open forum. And we discuss God and Source and the God of, you know, all that
mm-hmm.
exists. And we praise him and so forth.
Right
and,
on.
We also, you know, it's metaphysical, so we are also a group made up of psychics and mediums.
Right.
And recently I have been taking training to become a certified psychic, and I have been a medium for a couple of years, and
mm-hmm.
so, you know, but I'm just trying to enhance what I already have. And
absolutely. But, Paul, what does it mean when you're a reverend of the church that you're describing, you know, a church of the metaphysical? What does that mean? Do you, like, just... Do you lead, you know, like a Sunday service or give a talk, or what does that mean?
That's right. That means that I can stand in front of the congregation and give my, you know, speech. And not only that, but I can fully function as like any other reverend. I can marry people.
Cool.
I can give, you know, yeah. So keep that in mind if you ever want to do that. But,
you mean if we want to get married?
yeah. If you want to do that.
I don't think I'd ever do that again.
right.
But, I know. I always have to remind Jason he's married. But no, okay,
yeah,
sorry.
No.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Lightning struck twice for me. So But at any rate, you know, I could do everything that a reverend does, but in the state of Texas, it's stated by law that you, in order to practice as a psychic medium, you also, you're considered a healer, so therefore all healers have to be a reverend, that if you don't
okay.
put your hands on people or anything like that. So it's a state law.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, is if that's a state statute. So you can't, in the state of Texas, be a practicing medium, is that without some sort of certification or licensing?
Correct. That's right.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not either.
You know, it's a good thing to do. You know, if you're going to, especially if you're going to charge people money to do it, you want to know that they're, you know, a certified medium or and psychic, and that they are registered with the state. So it's just the law, and you have to follow it and protect yourself, you know.
Right on. I like Jason just said, Paul, I've lived in California and Oregon all my life, and these states don't have that type of certification, but I'd like to understand, and that's a whole nother show, if you will,
right.
about what you have to go through to get certified in Texas. So, yeah, right on. We're
right.
almost out of time, Paul, kind of coming to the end here of Paranormal Horizons on Blog Talk Radio and KITCFM.com.
We have a couple minutes. So I can
yes.
tell you what happened at my recent investigation at Waverly.
Oh, please, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've been waiting for that.
Okay. So I did capture a ghost there, and, you know, it's on my Facebook page, Central Texas Paranormal. And but I want to tell you about the body chute, and I want to talk about the autopsy room, and also the recreation room. So,
was that at Waverly?
Chute. Yes, Waverly.
Okay.
Sanatorium.
All
so,
right. And we,
down.
Now, Paul,
so anyway,
we've got about 4 minutes left or three, but that's okay.
okay.
But we can continue to talk to you after the 8 o'clock
okay.
hour, but right at 8 o'clock, we might kind of do, we're going to do a closing because up for our affiliation with KITCFM, but then we can
okay.
continue to talk to you about that experience. So this is the Waverly
okay.
Institution, and where is that located?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay, and it wasn't that a kind of a, it was a, was it a smallpox institution
no,
or a mental?
It was actually a sanatorium
okay.
where people with, you know, lung infections and TB kind of place, you know, that had diseases that were infectious. And
was this in the 30s and the 40s?
Yes, yes.
Okay, got it.
And so, but what happened to me was I was down in the autopsy room, standing out in the hallway, and a spirit came out from the autopsy room and introduced herself to me. Her name was Sally. She came out of the room, and she comes up to me and says, "My name is Sally."
And you could see her, like just
yeah.
walked out? Wow.
Yeah, I saw her. She was in a gown, and it was kind of dirty, and her hair was kind of messed up, and, you know, she was kind of dirty-faced, and, you know, it wasn't pleasant to look at, but she came up to me and said, "My name is Sally." She turned around and walked right back into the room and set off all of our gear. You know, we had, you know, a bunch of REM pods and you know, and other devices in there, and it set off all of them, and I'm like, I just couldn't believe my eyes when it happened, and yet there was somebody laying down in the body cooler, you know,
pretty
at
amazing.
The time it happened. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Man.
And then in the body chute, it's a tunnel, and I sat there by myself, and all of a sudden the spirits started to talk to me, and I didn't need to record it or amplify it at
wow.
all, because the tunnel actually amplified it, and I actually heard them call my name, Paul. You know, like
really?
I'm like, oh, I was getting creeped out. You know, so
Hey, Paul, let me just interrupt for a second. We're
right.
just going to be signing off for KITCFM 106.5, KITCFM.com. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Stay tuned for another great episode next week, Saturdays from 10 to 11 p.m. on KITCFM. And, Paul, let's go ahead and continue with this great story.
Okay.
We're on blogtalkradio.com, Paul Coffey from Central Texas Paranormal, and you were at the Waverly Institute, and gosh,
right.
sounds
it
like
was,
you had
yeah.
some, you encountered Sally.
Yeah, that's,
yeah.
I'd be running out of there. If I saw that, I mean, I would never, I'd turn around and not even look back.
Right.
I'd be traumatized. Well, I'd have PTSD.
It was pretty cool, Jason, because, like I said, she came out of the room, and one of our investigators, the lead investigator of this group, for Texas Ghostly Gatherings, Annette Porterfield, she was laying in the body cooler, you know, the bottom drawer on the bottom, and before, you know, you get to the ground, and she's laying there on her back in the cooler, and this thing walked out past her towards me in the hallway, and it said, "My name is Sally," and turned around and walked back in. And what validated the whole dang thing was that it walked back in where we had REM pods set up, and it set them all off. And we,
wow.
you know, had a, yeah, and they were like going off, lighting up the room and everything. And it was just a, you know, and the girl that was in the bottom drawer there, she was like, "Wow, I couldn't believe that," you know. You know, and what just happened, and I'm like, "Wow, you're not going to believe this." But, you know,
but Paul, when you say set them off, and forgive me, but just for our listeners, when you say it set off that equipment, so do you mean it? Everything sort of started like picking up signals, or
well,
did
yeah.
it?
Yeah, can you tell us
okay.
what a REM pod is for the listeners?
Well,
sake?
Yeah, it's a device that it looks like a round can, and it has like four lights on it. On the top of the can, and it has an antenna that sticks out about 2 feet tall, like a you know, regular antenna out of a radio. And that antenna picks up EMF, or it tells the difference if some EMF has broken the field that it generates. And when
uh-huh.
that happens, yeah, and when that happens, it sets off a buzzer. So,
okay,
you know,
so
some,
that's what happened then.
Yeah, we had also some Mel meters that are, you know, the type that have EMF meters built into them, like a REM, you know, they're REM Mel meters. And so they also went off as well. So the whole, all of them were going off, and the lights were, you know, flickering on and off. So the spirit actually set off all of the gear that we had there. So
Pretty powerful.
Yeah, that sounds like good validation. I mean, that's
validation.
You know.
Yeah, it's like real cool. And the second time it happened, I was up on the second floor, and there was an area that they call it the recreation room. It's a pretty big room, and I sat down. I was getting tired and walking around, so I sat down. And that was it. But all of a sudden, a male, he was kind of balding, and he also had a gown on. He came strolling into the room, came up to me and said, "Hello, my name is John. John," and then turned around and walked out, right out the same door. So,
wow.
That happened. And
it sounds like the ghosts
so,
at Waverly are friendly. I mean...
Yeah, are they friendly?
I mean, yeah.
You know, so, but I'm seeing this through my mind's eye, but it looked very realistic, as if, in fact, I was seeing it just, you know, just like in motion, like somebody walked in the door with my own
eyes.
Right,
because you have that ability. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, I've had my third eye opened, and which gives me that ability to be able to see this stuff. And but the other thing that occurred was the body shoot again, and I could hear the spirits. All of the investigators went down the body shoot, and I said, you know something, I'm not going to do it because it's...
Wait a minute.
You know,
what's a body shoot? Wait a minute. What's a body shoot?
That's where, is that where they dump the body, the dead body?
Yeah. Well,
oh,
that's
yeah.
where
oh,
they take the body down this chute to a hearse that's waiting.
So that's just not a normal word in my vocabulary, so I had to clarify that, everyone. Thank you, Paul.
Well, when you talk about the Waverly Sanatorium, it is part of that dialogue. It's a very big, thing to see, and everybody wants to go to the body shoot, and it's well renowned, and it's you'll see it on all the other.
I don't
other,
think I would want to go there.
Yeah,
right.
I wouldn't either.
So I'm sitting there by myself as the other investigators went down, and I could hear the spirits talking about the investigators going down to the body shoot. And they were saying, you know, like, you know, get them out of here, you know, or something derogatory like that. I heard, you know, something whispering. And then I started hearing them call my name. And like I said, there was, you could hear it, but it was pretty clear. And it was saying,
that's freaky.
Oh, you know, and I'm like, man, I'm getting creeped out now. You know, and I have actually,
I
believe
would
it or
too,
not.
Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually had a ghost manifest next to me, not at that location, but at another investigation, and I got creeped out by that. But normally I'm pretty cool on an investigation, but, you know, when stuff like this is cumulative,
well, you were being bombarded. You know, you were getting
right.
it from every kind of room
right.
you walked in, so to speak. So that's pretty overwhelming, Paul.
Yeah, wow. You know, I would always, you know, every room I went into, I would wonder what now is going to take place. But to me, Waverly was worth the trip. It was worth the money to go. And I enjoyed it. And I'm hoping someday to go back and do it again. And
But Paul, give us your summary of Waverly, because we've talked to a couple of other guests here on Paranormal Horizons where they've gone to Waverly. So do you feel like it's a evil place? Is it just a place where spirits are
no.
hanging around that have decided not to pass over? What's your take on it?
All right. What I'm getting for Waverly is I didn't, you know, there's it's known. They'll tell you that there are some, bad spirits there. And they'll roam around and they'll push you, slap you. And, you know, I don't doubt that. But I will state in my summary of the place that Waverly is an excellent haunt. It lived up to my expectations as a paranormal investigator. And believe me, I have captured many ghosts, and up to and including I captured one there this time. So I'm pretty happy. You know, I'm a happy camper about it. And if you want to see that
right
ghost,
on.
It's on my Facebook page, but it is a haunted location. It's very haunted. Is how I.
But what I'm hearing you say, Paul, though, is it's not evil. It's not demonic. Is that accurate?
I can't tell you that it's not demonic. I cannot tell you that there aren't any evil spirits there. They did not interact with me, okay?
Okay.
They just didn't come out. Are they there? Could they be there? They can be there. And
Right
they can go there. if they're not there at the moment, they can come and go as well.
Evil or not, I ain't going there.
And I'm a
sissy. I'm a paranormal
I'm
sissy.
I'm only going there if I can go with Paul. Okay.
Right.
If he holds my hand, I might go. I don't know.
Okay.
And if you know of any good investigations that you'd want me to go to, let me know.
Well, we've got some going on here in Oregon, Paul.
Well,
so maybe
you can join us
sometime.
I may make a trip out to the West Coast. I have some friends out there. I've been out to the West Coast a few times. But we'll leave that door open.
Yeah, Paul Coffey, Central Texas Paranormal, thank you for sharing your stories this evening and, you know, just being so open to talking about who you are and how you got to where you are. And I hope you do come out to the West Coast because we would love to, you know, meet you. That's where Jason and I are here in Oregon. And who knows, maybe we will get to Texas someday too. So.
Yeah, sure. If you're ever down here, love to get together. And there's a bunch of people in the paranormal down here. And, of course, we have our Phantom Fest, which is a paranormal conference every year.
When is that?
Here in I believe it's in September. You can Google
okay.
it. Phantom Fest. It's F-A, it starts with an F and
okay.
Phantom and F-A-N.
And is that, and where is that held?
It's going to be held at the Menger Hotel in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
And downtown San Antonio. And in actuality, not to go on, but in 2012, I captured a ghost in a hotel room there at the Menger Hotel.
Really?
So, yes, I did.
What a
yes,
nice event. Yeah,
yes.
I wish that Jason and I had all the time in the world and,
yeah.
you know, all the budget
and
in the world to come to these
right.
events because we would love to be able to, you know, do some live broadcasts, but let's not rule that out. That might happen in the future.
Right. So we'll leave that open and, the invitation's there. But in the meantime, you can look up on my YouTube channel, and my username is Paranormal Paul with the number one. So it's all one word, Paranormal
okay.
Paul one. And that ghost of the Menger Hotel is also a video that's up there, so you'll see that if you go up there. And you'll probably also see the ghost from the USS Lexington that I captured the video. That's probably up there as well. So there's a bunch of things.
Well, right, and, Paul, if you have time and you don't mind, just send Jason or myself the links on our Facebook page or,
okay.
however we're connected, and we'll post those and kind of get okay. that out there. And I'd like to look at those myself. So, Paul Coffey, thank you so much.
All right, okay, anytime. And, when it comes to the paranormal, I love talking about it and my experiences and all the many ghosts that I've captured on camera. Right now I stand at about 30 ghosts that I've captured. So, I actually got more going on that I'm not telling you about.
I bet.
Secretive. Ooh.
Yeah,
but Paul, what? You're also an intuitive, and thank you. It sounds like you've helped many spirits pass over, and that's so important. Everything that we've talked about tonight, I feel like that spirits present themselves to you because they feel safe in some way, and I just want to put that out there. So,
well, they do, but when spirits come to me, they're demanding of me. They let me know they're there, and they want to go to the light.
It sounds like a relationship.
Yeah.
And sometimes they want to go right then and there. They want to go now. They don't want to wait, you know. And they're very impatient. Now that they found me, they want to go now. And a lot of times, you know, I have to, I wake up in the middle of the night, and I have to send them, you know, because there's a lot of them. And it's something I do, and it's not a bad thing. I serve God by doing this. And in actuality, I was asked to do it by God. And I know that's all hard to understand, but it's true, and I'm not making it up. And
thank you, for being so candid, Paul Coffey. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you all for having me on the show.
And we look forward to having you. Yeah, we're
going
to have you on again, and I'm sure our paths will cross in the future. Thank you, Paul Coffey, Central Texas Paranormal. Good night.
Thanks, Paul.
Good night. Thank you, Jason. Bye.
All right, Jason. My gosh, what an amazing person.
Yeah, and I want to make it very clear to the universe, and I've mentioned this before, that I do not want to see ghosts. We had talked a little bit that I have some abilities that I know about.
Yeah, I know, but you're denying it.
Exactly, and I'm denying it intentionally. I do not want spirits following me home, waking me up in the middle of the night or anything like that.
No, it's I don't want that either.
Not interested.
I know.
I got enough going on.
I know. I wonder if Paul ever sleeps.
How could you if you're seeing ghosts all the time?
I know, and Archbishop File talked about that too, that, you know, he, you know, because he's involved in the exorcism group of the Catholic Church, but he was always interrupted and, you know, things were following him around. So, yeah, oh my gosh. Hey, Jason, who is our guest next week? Because you're kind of the person that does all that.
Yes, it's a chore. I do it, but
I'm sorry.
I'm not going to lie. It takes a lot of time to find people.
Well, it does.
And
if you want to be on the show, contact us.
Yeah, we do get a lot of people contacting us, but you know, when you're trying to organize guests for the show, there's all these different time issues. You know,
I know.
Where it's just really confusing because some people can only be on certain dates.
In different time zones.
Yeah, it's a hassle, but I have taken the lead on doing that, and I do enjoy it. It's just time-consuming. But next week we're going to have Martha Hazard Decker. She has 30 years experience in law enforcement, and she's also a paranormal investigator and the author of Paranormal Profiling. So it's kind of a rare combination of somebody that it's kind of a copy of me, actually, because I have over 20 years in investigation, not paranormal investigation, and I apply that to the paranormal. So she sounds really similar to me in that regard. And so it should be a great guest to have on next week. And one thing I did want to mention before we close the show for the night is that I want to thank Darlene Watts, who doing the banners for our show. I know it takes a lot of work, and she is so appreciated for taking the time to help us out with that, because that is a skill that I don't have. I can work with audio and stuff like that, but if it comes to the visual stuff, that's not my forte.
I know, and Darlene, you know, just thank you. And, you know, this is a person that is just interested and passionate about the paranormal and just does this. We've only met her online and, you know, thanks to technology. And, Darlene, I hope you're listening, and thank you. And somehow I think we might meet somehow in the future. So, yeah, look forward to another episode of Paranormal Horizons, blogtalkradio.com, every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, and every Saturday on KITCFM.com, 10 to 11 p.m. Pacific Time. Good night, everyone. Good night. Thank you, my co-host, Jason Ophir.
Good night, everyone.
You have been listening to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Pat Rice and Jason Ophir. Be sure to come listen to the show next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Blog Talk Radio. And also, check out our Facebook at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook.